At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on The Grave Talks, followed by Spirits, a conversation with Gwendolyn Guthrie. It all started when she was 12. Gwendolyn Guthrie started having prophetic dreams, seeing shadows, dealing with the fear and confusion caused by spirits. Those early paranormal experiences drove her to seek answers of her own. She began investigating paranormal, cryptids, folklore, and even alien research, and has been to this day, more than 20 years after that initial childhood experience. Today, we hear her story on The Grave Talks.
My interest didn't really start on investigating the paranormal until later, but my experiences have started happening around 12 years old. I had what I call a paranormal awakening, and that's where you have this some sort of awakening event. It kind of jump starts your sensitivities, your precognitive abilities, and your ability to see and speak to and hear spirits. It all almost happened overnight for me. I ran from it for a good long period of time, but my interest was always relatively piqued at why I seemed to be targeted and why I seemed to be the one that they were reaching out to. So I kind of started when I was about 12 or 13 in investigating, but I didn't get more seriously into it until I was about 18, 19 years old, because I was kind of just dipping in and then running back away from it again as soon as I got freaked out. So, but I became a more serious researcher when I was about 18 or 19.
Tell me about that awakening that you had. Did anything in particular bring that on, or did it seem to kind of come out of nowhere?
You know, I haven't told this story a lot because it's very impactful and it's a very long story. But I was a very naughty child. I just broke a lot of rules. I did a lot of bad things. I was always out running around with friends, and I was always breaking, you know, whatever rules I could. I was misbehaving in school. And I don't even remember my life prior to 12 years old. I don't remember anything prior to 12 except for a little few bits and pieces of scattered memories that could even potentially be, you know, like missing pieces I was filling in based on stories I was being told about my childhood. Mm-hmm. But we got this cat, and this cat, it just showed up. And I don't remember how it showed up or what happened. And even my mom couldn't remember when I went back and I talked to her about it later. But we ended up with this cat, and this cat was always very affectionate with me. But, you know, me being the bad little kid that I was, I really never wanted to mess with it. You know, I would scratch it by its tail, just irritate it so it would run away and leave me alone. Like, I didn't really want anything to do with it. And I was never mean to it. I never kicked it. I never threw it. I never did anything harmful to it. I just, you know, would aggravate it so it would run away so that I could do what I wanted to do. And then one day I was coming out of my bathroom stairs, this is when I was 12, and the cat was just standing there, and it looked different in its eyes. And I was like, what is wrong with you? Why aren't you running away from me? And I was like, maybe I should try to pet this cat instead of just trying to get it to run away, because I had time to do so. So I went to reach down and pet the cat, and the cat reached up and swatted my hand. And I went to hiss at it to make it run away. Mm-hmm. And, but before I could even do that, it spotted on my hand. I looked into its eyes, and its eyes like almost morphed. They became little slits into like the really big iris. And it was like the whole world just faded away. Everything started going into slow motion. It was like just time just paused. And it was like me and this cat just staring at each other for the longest time. And I just felt this wave of like all these emotions I was never able to feel before, like compassion and understanding and caring and all this stuff. It was like I went into this cat's head and I understood everything. And, you know, how my irritation towards the cat affected the cat and its happiness and things like that. And it was just this massive awakening. And then when I kind of came back to the real world, the cat just turned around and ran away. It ran down the steps, ran out the door, and never saw the cat again, ever. But it was that very same night. And I went looking for this cat because I was like, oh my gosh, I realize everything now. And I wanted to go find it and I wanted to love on it. And I wanted to be, you know, everything that I wasn't before with it, but I could never find it. But it was that very same night that this happened that I had my first precognizant dream. And then it was just a snowball effect from there. And I think that, you know, it's kind of a wild theory, but I almost wonder if there wasn't like a piece of me missing prior to that. Like, you know, that understanding, that compassion, like almost like a piece of my soul that was missing. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, somehow I got it back. And it was like the whole world just opened up and was enlightening to me. It was like I could see the world from a whole different perspective. And, you know, ever since then, I've been super empathetic. Mm-hmm. I've been, you know, super, I won't say psychic, but always knowing when something is going to go awry or things like that. I wouldn't consider myself full-blown psychic, but I do have some sort of intuition about what could happen. But that was my awakening experience. And, you know, I don't know whatever happened to the cat. Nobody ever really knows, but the cat disappeared after that. And in my head, I almost wonder, was that cat even like a real cat? And I know it sounds crazy, but there's things like familiars and stuff that are known all throughout history. And a lot of people have suggested that what if it was a form of a familiar?
Mm-hmm. What do you think it was about that cat? Or do you think that the cat was just a normal cat, and maybe it was you that had this experience when you were looking at it? Maybe the cat, if I was standing across the room, I wouldn't see the cat be transforming, but it was your experience that you had. Was it something that came over you and made you perceive the cat that sort of way in order to almost flip a switch? Your body needed to have something change. And that happened to be the moment where it happened, and that cat somehow triggered it.
Yeah, I think that could absolutely be the case. You know, I have a hard time believing that the cat wasn't a real cat. I have a hard time believing that the cat, you know, performed some sort of witchery on me to open me up to everything. I really wonder if it wasn't just in that opportunity that was the prime moment for something else to kind of awaken me.
What was it prior to 12 years old that you felt that you didn't have empathy or feelings or just kind of that emptiness? Was there some sort of trauma there, or was it just the way that you were living your life for those years?
You know, I don't really know if there was like any kind of trauma per se, mm-hmm. But it's hard to say because, like I said, I don't remember. All I remember from prior to 12 years old is memories of things that people would tell me. Like, yeah. My behavior a lot of times was very strange, mm-hmm. as a child. Like, I would do things like bang my head off of stuff over and over again until my head would bleed. It was like there was something, some sort of disconnect, something missing all the time.
Sure.
Up until I hit 12 years old and I had that awakening. And now I'm like the most empathetic person you could ever meet, you know? But prior to that, awakening, I was just horrible. I mean, like, there was just like no compassion, no understanding, no concept of even life or death to me.
Sure. It was like that moment, suddenly those emotions and those feelings kicked on. And once you had that moment of, oh my gosh, you're feeling these things you've never felt before you were just kind of living in this world that you were dropped into, and acting out and doing this and that, not really feeling right or wrong or good or bad, just doing whatever you may do. But somehow that kicked on for you. Did your parents, did your family notice a difference in you at that moment? Obviously, you sure did.
Yeah, my mom did. So it was around that same time frame. It was actually exactly that same time frame. I was diagnosed with a form of seizures when I was younger. But after that awakening incident, those went away completely. And I didn't even know about me being diagnosed with seizures until I was a little later in life. And I was talking with my mom about the cat, trying to figure out my past. And she was like, oh, yeah, you used to have seizures around that time. And then they just went away. And I was like, wait, I had seizures? Like, I didn't even know.
Kind of a big piece. Up.
Yeah, that's kind of huge. You'd think you would remember that. But again, I didn't remember anything from that time frame. I do remember like having a seizure, but I remember seeing a giant frog. But that was, again, one of those little glimpses of memories that was so fleeting. Who knows where it came from? But
sure.
I tracked my youth records through Children's Hospital and found where I was diagnosed, what the treatment that I received, and everything. And then I got the records where I went back and they did several tests on me and the seizures were gone. And at some point in time, strangely enough, I have medical records for this too, and I don't think that there's an error. I had a blood type change of all things. So I went from A positive to O positive. So I'm not sure what that's about.
I didn't know that's even a thing.
I didn't know either. And I did a lot of research and I found out that it can be a thing if you've received any type of blood transfusion or anything like that. But as far as I'm aware, I never did, but my mom has passed now. So there's no way for me to know for sure if that's what could have caused it.
Sure.
But I've tracked again my medical records and I can't find any kind of blood transfusion that was necessary or conducted on me through the avenues that I've been searching. But
sure. Yeah, I mean, I could understand it that way, but that's interesting. But yeah, like you said, there's a piece to the puzzle there that you can't ask anymore to get a full perspective on all that. You said that when you had that experience with the cat, that was the first day that you had some very specific type of dreams. Talk about that.
Yeah, it was that night I went to bed and I remember waking up and seeing life squad lights or red and blue lights on the ceiling. And I tried to wake my mom up, but she wouldn't wake up. And I kept trying to tell her, grandpa's dead. And then I woke up and it was exactly the same. There was lights on the ceiling. Tried to wake my mom up. She did wake up in real life. And I said, Mom, Grandpa's dead. And she goes, what? No, he's not. I said, yes, he is. Look at the lights. There's a life squad here. And she said, there's no lights. And I said, yeah, it's here. And it was a gentleman that we called Grandpa who lived in another apartment complex that was attached to ours, but on the backside. So there would have been no way for the lights to even get over in that area. But I could still see them. I could see them plain as day. And she said, I'll go out and check. So she went outside and she walked around the complex and she went to the other side and I creeped behind her and I followed her the whole way. And as we came around the corner, I could see the lights and they were right underneath of his apartment because his apartment was on the second story. And I started screaming and freaking out. I was like, I told you. And she said, you got to go back inside. So the next day I went over there and took a couple days of going over there before, his wife finally answered the door and I said, hey, I wanted to check on grandpa. And she said, he's passed. So, that was my first incident of a precognizant dream.
Let me ask you about that dream and how that information came to you. It was knowledge, but did you see his death? How did that information translate into you saying, he's dead? Was it an experience in the dream or someone told you in the dream? What happened that gave you that?
Yeah, no, it was just like I had this immediate knowledge. And that's the way my abilities have always worked. It's like a memory that wasn't there that's all of a sudden is there.
So what is it? What is in the memory?
there was no memory of his other than me waking up in my dream, seeing the lights on the ceiling, waking her, trying to wake her up,
okay,
trying to tell her he was dead.
Okay.
That was the dream itself. And because I woke up and I saw the lights and I had had that happen in my dream, I knew that I needed to tell her that he
okay.
Dead.
Okay. That makes more sense then. Almost like a download of information. It's boom, it's there. And you're having this experience.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it's always been for me. It's never been, there's sometimes some little subtle signs and symbols that I can pick up on that leads me to an answer that could happen in the future. But most of the time it's just boom. It's there. The knowledge is there. The memory is there. All the information I need to know is there.
What kind of reaction did you have from your mom when you gave this information that turned out to be true?
My mom was very, she was in denial about a lot of stuff. I grew up in a very religious background.
Mm-hmm.
We were a holiness religion. It's very similar to almost Mennonite.
Okay.
And so she was in denial, but she had kind of broke away from the church.
Mm-hmm.
So she was a little bit more accepting of the fact that I just told her that
mm-hmm.
versus the rest of my family would have called me evil and sure. satanic and everything else because I had that knowledge. But she was like, oh, that's just weird, and ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want to talk about it. She didn't want to open up about it. And then one of my experiences started happening, the shadows, the talking, the things getting thrown at me, stuff like that. She denied it for a long time until she co-experienced a situation with me.
Tell me about that. Tell me about the experiences that you were having that you just referenced.
So the things that would kind of go into play would be, I would be up in my room and I would be putting my clothes on the hanger and pushing the hanger to the side. And then I'd turn around and the hanger would be on the floor. And you know, you think, this could just be me not hanging it up properly, but it would happen over and over again. And then all of a sudden there would be like five or six things on the floor. And I'm like, how did that happen? I just hung that up. And it was always silent. Like things almost would apport from one place to another. There wasn't really a whole lot of noise involved. And my books would, I always kept my books very organized and my books would unorganize themselves in a matter of seconds. I would crochet a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And my ball of yarn would just pop out of whatever I had it in and roll across the room instead of like towards me like you expect with a ball of yarn because sure. a lot of times it'll roll towards you. My favorite place to hang out was the corner of the steps. So the steps had a round corner and I would always sit at that corner and do like artwork and things like that. And things would get thrown out of the bathtub down the stairs at me.
Mm-hmm.
But the experience that me and my mom co-witnessed together was I was carrying groceries and I carried something into the house for her. And I had told her, I was like, Mom, I feel like there's something in this living room. Like, I feel like a heaviness. And she was like, oh, you're being silly. Just go out there. And she had walked in the living room as I was walking out. She saw a reflection in like a TV stand that we had had. It had a glass window front. She saw a reflection of what she thought was me setting a bag down onto the floor in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard her say from when I was out in the car, I heard her say, bring it in here. And I was like, what is she talking to? So I bring a new bag in and she's standing in the living room with her face just white. And I'm like, what just happened? And she goes, I just saw it. I saw it. I know what you're talking about. I saw it. And I said, what happened? And she said, when she came around the corner to tell me to bring it in because I was ignoring her, there was nothing there. And she looks back over and there was just still a shadow in the glass cabinet before it faded. So, yeah.
Yeah, I gave her some, was it something she accepted that had happened after that? Or was it still kind of one of those, well, maybe, you know, trying to find logic in something that may not be so logical?
She accepted it from then on out. She never tried to find any logic behind it. Whenever I would come to her with an experience, mm-hmm. she never tried to make sense of it. She would only say, yeah, just ignore it. It'll go away. Just ignore it. It'll go away.
Sure.
Or, okay. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about it. You know, but before it was always trying to find the logical reasoning, you know, making me feel like I was making a bigger deal out of it than what I was. But then after that, she just kind of you know, she'd acknowledged my story, my experience, but she didn't want to delve any further into it.
Do you still have experiences of that nature to this day?
Yeah, actually, I always have something new coming through my house. It's like there's ones that were already here. There's two that spirits that were already here in this house when I moved in. But there seems to be like a circular, like open door of things, different things that'll come through. It'll stay for a few days or a week or 2 weeks, and then it'll be gone. And then a new one will come. And sometimes I'll get a couple at a time. It's almost like there's constantly things coming to me. And so depending on what's coming to me depends on the type of experiences I'll have in the home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have like this mimic that'll pop into my life periodically about every 7 or so years. And it will just create havoc and chaos in my house, going around and creating a bunch of mimicry, and then just disappear and then come back and disappear and come back. That's one that comes and goes periodically. There's other ones that come and go. Yeah.
When you say mimic, are you meaning like you're hearing it mimic your voice, or is it mimicking other people? What is it doing specifically?
Well, it's different than a doppelganger. So a doppelganger tends to be like a mimic of one particular person, their voice, their appearance, things like that. This sure. is a mimic that happens to try to copy whatever it can around it. So it has copied my dogs. It's copied me and my kids' voices. It's copied smells, other random sounds like keys jingling, just whatever it can mimic. It'll mimic that sound or that smell or that appearance.
Is it just you who has those experiences in your house, or does your family as well?
My family has the experiences as well. But if I start spending a lot of time at another person's house, they'll start having experiences like I have at my house. So it's almost like it takes a little bit before I tend to wear off on a place, before things start to happen in that place. So it's usually once I'm in a place for about a month, things mm-hmm. will start to occur as per norm for me.
So
so if I spend a lot of time at a friend's house, they'll start to have stuff happen at their house.
So it's not necessarily that other people's homes are haunted. It's more that maybe you bring them along, or maybe you bring them out in certain ways. Maybe these things are always around us, but you may be a beacon for them. Do you ever feel like that?
I do feel like a beacon. I think that I tend to be able to amplify the things that are already there because I'm so openly willing to communicate with these things that I'm not afraid like I used to be. I'm actually very comfortable and confident with spirits. But as far as like me bringing my spirits that follow me around with me when I go to investigate a place, it doesn't really happen. It usually takes a period of time before I start to wear off on a place, before they start to follow me to a particular place. So if I go to a home 4 times to complete an investigation, that's not really enough time for me to wear off or bring anything with me. So I know that the things that I'm experiencing at that particular house are what was already there.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like I have something that follows me everywhere I go that tends to help me with these things, because I think there's got to be some sort of catalyst that makes it so much easier for me to communicate and get through to them. And I think that maybe some sort of spirit guide or angel guide or whatever people want to call it, I think I have one, and they're kind of my go-between, you know, like the mediator.
Sure. I wonder about things like this, things that mimic real life, things that mimic things that are around us, and a lot of things. I wonder about shadow people and things that not necessarily coming at you from a place of consciousness, but from a place of something that's abnormal, something that you can look at and have an experience with, but go, what was that? Do you ever wonder if these experiences are some sort of energy shift or energy that you're giving off that is now out there into the ether? Essentially, it's the concept of haunting oneself with whatever energy that they're giving off. And that's why these things tend to happen to you more frequently, wherever you may be. And especially the mimicking thing, that's very interesting to kind of dive into of, are these things like natural, but not necessarily a spirit or a ghost, but somehow our energy reflecting back in odd ways that only certain people can pick up on?
No, I think actually, I think that you're really spot on with it. I think that a lot of people tend to want to put things into a box. And with these entities, energies, vibrations, whatever you want to call them, there's multiple classifications of types. And I think with mimics, the best way to classify a mimic is to classify it as an inhuman, unconscionable being that's not aware of life, death, pain, sorrow, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So they are capable of some very negative traits, but they're malleable, which means you can teach them. But as far as like maybe I'm creating this, I do have that theory. I don't settle on one theory until I'm absolutely sure about it. So my situation, I have multiple theories for. One of the theories is that there is a negative piece of me living on the outside of me. And maybe that's what's creating some of the chaos that I experience in my home. And the reason I say that is after I had my awakening, I always thought maybe my soul was put in me in that moment, or maybe some consciousness was put in me in that moment. But then I had a dream years and years and years ago where it started to make me think maybe it wasn't that. Maybe it was something removed from me. And this dream, I was laying on the floor in front of two mirrors, and I could see myself, half myself in both the mirrors. And it said I had to choose. And I was like, what? I don't want to choose. And I knew what it wanted me to do was choose good or evil. I said, I don't want to choose. And it said, you have to choose. And as it said that, it started, the two images in the mirror and the two mirrors started to separate and become two separate images in each mirror. And I'm looking up at them while laying on the floor, and they're both looking down at me. One of them is in like cream white dress. The other one is in like a beige brown dress. And I knew that the lighter color one was good. The darker color one was evil. And I had to choose. And I said, I don't want to choose. I want the option to have both. And it was in that moment I woke up and I never chose. Mm-hmm. And then I wonder, if I had chosen good, would I be experiencing some of the negative things that I experience now? Is that negative that I was supposed to get rid of in that moment? And so I do wonder that. I do wonder if I am creating some of the phenomena, but I don't realize it because it's a whole other piece of me that's almost separate from me.
Yeah, almost like a disconnected piece that you may not be aware of. And that makes me then wonder too, how does that connect to yourself pre-12 years old, where you don't have many memories of that point in time? It's almost like a different you that was there.
Right, exactly. And that's what I feel like too, just everything that had changed. It's just, it blows my mind how seizures were gone almost overnight, and mm-hmm. then the blood type changed. That kind of blows my mind almost to the point where I was like, am I adopted?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Like, but I know it's crazy, but it's like, you wonder that. It's like your whole youth you relied to. It's like, I was this and now I'm this. And I didn't even feel like I had a childhood. I don't remember it. So it's pretty difficult. Yeah,
that wraps up the first part of our conversation with Gwendolyn Guthrie. There's more tomorrow in part two of our conversation. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss it here on The Grave Talks. You can get it in advance when you sign up to be a premium subscriber through Apple Podcasts. Try it for 3 days free right now, or you can do it through Patreon, patreon.com/TheGraveTalks. Get access to all of our episodes, part one, part two, ad-free. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.